Hi and welcome to CDI's Restorative Practices podcast, Circles of Connection, where we get right into the heart of the community and talk all things RP. These past few months we've been busy collecting stories from right across the country about the impact of RP on people's work and life. We talked to social and community workers, youth workers, SNAs, teachers, students and more to gather their testimonies and stories. Each episode is focusing on a different setting. If you're not familiar with restorative practices, the restorative questions and the work CDI does, you can listen to the first episode of our podcast series where it's all explained.
Hi, I'm Dorothy Danu, a restorative practices trainer for CDI, delighted to be gathering these stories. For this episode, I went to Oberstown Children Detention Campus, where CDI has been providing several sets of training for the staff and the young people in the past years, and I met with Brian Hogan, Campus Deputy Director, Selena Rai, Young Person Program Manager, Oshin Dunn, Pauline Towie and Sam Mourned, residential care workers. We talked about their work, the implementation of restorative practices, its challenges, the way it impacts on their practices, on the young people under their care, and the vision they have for Oberstown in the future. Oberstown Children Detention Campus provides a safe and secure environment for young people sentenced or remanded by the courts. The implementation of restorative practices in Oberstown is work in progress. Several sets of training have been delivered to the staff. The young people took part in a pilot project. A specific implementation plan was piloted in two units. The focus is now on having the whole campus run as restoratively as possible at each level. But as in many institutions, implementation takes time. First, let's hear from Brian and the vision he has for the whole campus.
My name is Brian Hogan, and I'm a Campus Deputy Director here in Oberstown. I've worked in this area of work since 1989. I begun working in a child psychiatric unit at Warrenstown House from 1989 to 1991. And I've worked here on the campus then from 91 to 96 as a residential care staff, now called a social care resident, social care worker. Then from 96 to 99, I was unit manager in Oberstown Boys School. And then later deputy director and director in Oberstown Boys School up until 2013. When the three older schools and indeed Finglas Child and Adolescent Centre had moved over before that. But there was an amalgamation of four schools into what's now Oberstown Children's Detention Campus. I went on secondment then to another organisation for 5 years, and I'm back now since November 2018. And I work generally in the area of working really on placement planning for young people. So I chair most of the placement planning meetings, and I chair the multidisciplinary team meeting with the ACTS team, forensic CAMS, nursing and social work. And I'm also involved with Selena in programs, young people's programs, and more recently in permitted absence for young people as well. So my sort of an interest and take on restorative practice is I think that it's really, really important that when we speak about restorative practice, that the whole organization is involved in a restorative practice ethos. So we need senior management. Management, care staff, young people. We need to see the organization, the entire organization, as a community. And we need to have a commitment, all of us, to work with the restorative practice principles, to listen to one another, to be inclusive with one another, and to work together to work out when something goes wrong, what has gone wrong, and how can we fix it. And how can we make things better for young people, but also for ourselves? And I think restorative practices, techniques and ideas and ethos is an ideal way to work and live together. And it's I find that it's very, very important from a point of view of relationships. And I believe that particularly on a campus like this, relationships between adults and young people, and but also very much, very importantly, relationships between adults need a lot of close attention. And we need to concentrate on them, and we need to take the temperature of those relationships frequently. And we need to work on them where they're not going well. And I just find restorative practice to be ideal from that point of view.
Selena and Oisin introduce themselves and their work.
My name is Selena Riley. I've been on Oberstown campus for the last 20 years in various different roles. As Brian has explained, we kind of move around a bit on campus. So I started off as a night supervisor, moved on to residential care staff, then on to unit manager. In the last 3 years, I've become a young persons programs manager, which has responsibility for delivering programs for to address young people's offending behaviour on campus.
So my name is Oisin Dunn. I'm a residential childcare worker here in Oberstown Children Detention Campus. I've also been trained for the last, I think it's around about 5 years or so, as a restorative practice facilitator. Yeah, so I suppose this is a detention centre, so we have young people who are in conflict with the law, who are, I suppose, you know, maybe sent here by the courts, either on remand or on a committal sentence. And my role is to work with those young people, caring for their daily needs, like primary needs, food, and, you know, I suppose the organisation presents delivers like food and shelter and that, and then the kind of care aspect, kind of that's where I come in and be looking after the young people who come through the doors here, you know, managing their behaviour and caring for them, making sure that their needs are met.
For all of them, building positive relationships with the young people is at the core of the work they do. And the introduction of restorative practices helped them name and extend what they had been doing before. To build and maintain these relationships, they mostly use the informal element of restorative practices like restorative language or conversation, and getting some training helped them build their confidence.
There are lots and lots of restorative practice examples that are going on here in the campus. Sometimes they're going on unconsciously to people. Many, many people work in a restorative way and work very much, very, very much on a relationship-based model of care with young people.
My name is Pauline and I'm a residential care staff here in Oberstown, and I have been for over 20 years. Well, everyone has said it at some point. The biggest thing in terms of the way we work with these young people is developing relationships with them. And it seems to be central to the ethos of restorative practice too. It's hugely important in everything we do.
I use restorative practice all the time. I don't really think about it. It's just an approach that I would use and have done really from early on, in that I work very much on relationships. So you build strong trust and relationships with young people, with your staff teams. And I think if you build those relationships at the outset, they'll take you through. It's very important, and Sam might talk more about this as well, but it's very important from a young person's programs point of view, when you're trying to help a young person address their offending behaviour, that you have that relationship with them, because you need to be able to challenge them around certain thinking that they have. And if you don't have that relationship with them, it's very hard to challenge them in an appropriate way.
It's all like Oberstown and detention and social care, kind of, it's all about relationships, you know. As Irvin Yalom says himself, it's about the relationship, the relationship, the relationship, and that's what it is, you know. I think this, like, you know, it's a great opportunity, like, working here to work with young people and that, and kind of, you know, like, I suppose I'm working here 14, 15 years or so, I think since 2006. And like over the years, like, you know, there's been young people who've been sent here, boys and girls and that, who, like, you know, it starts off and they're basically fighting, arguing, fighting with the world. You know, you know, but like we've managed to kind of get in there and build relationships with them and that. And, you know, it's brilliant to kind of see when it comes full circle, like a young person who is so in crisis and then you kind of to turn it around and that, like, that's great. That's the kind of, that's the kind of feel good factor for me. And I think for most of the other people, that's why we do it. That's why we do it. So I suppose on a, like on a personal level, I'd use the informal, the informal more like side of restorative practice, more sort of conversations and restorative language and that, you know, kind of using that and how I'd speak to the young people. It's kind of like a kind of, it was a lot of it. And it's kind of what we did here in Oberstown anyway. It's kind of very kind of close to what we like the other training programs that we've had over the years and that, but like, I suppose kind of like the introduction of kind of connecting the kind of empathic language, you know, talking about your feelings and that, you know, it's like kind of, we did that here anyway. And, you know, I think that's kind of personally, that's kind of the respect, like the whole kind of respect angle, I suppose, that's the kind of right way to speak to somebody. If you want them to respect you, you kind of have to kind of role model it yourself. So I think that's what stood out for me.
My name's Sam. I've been on this campus working for 16 years. I'm a residential social care worker. In terms of restorative practice, I'd echo what everybody else has said here in the room, is that to me, it's all about relationships and relationship building. That's at the heart of this job from day one here, you know. Building relationships with each other, but clearly with the young people here, you know. And that should be the be all and end all about this job, is that once you've got good connections and relationships built with these lads, then you can do the work that we would aspire to do in terms of rehabilitation or improving coping mechanisms and coping skills. But that's all secondary to having built a relationship. In terms of restorative practice, we would have done that long before I was ever aware of restorative practice. And I think all the training that Brian's alluded to and the stuff that CDI have done on campus is beneficial because it puts labels and names on what we did for years and years here. That meant that you can kind of, you're talking the same language, you're speaking in the same terms, but you can kind of identify what it was you were doing before. And that's why speaking respectfully or active listening or giving people time and giving people positive feedback to what they're saying to you. When you put labels on these, it helps you identify what you're actually doing, and then you can expand on them, you know? So I think restorative practice would have existed here in some format long before we ever knew about restorative practice. By and large, I think we tend to use it more informally. And I know that was suggested over here as well. Yeah, it's in your everyday, all day interactions with lads, giving them the time, focusing on them, listen to what they're saying, listen to what they're thinking or what they're feeling, and being able to communicate that back to them, you know. So that's one of the things I would identify as a value of the restorative practice that we use on the campus. Selena spoke earlier on about the programs we do. Restorative practice has a lot to add for me in doing those, because again, the relationship is central to that. You can't work on as coping skills or try and manage their self-control or exhibit distress tolerance or whatever else without having a relationship first and foremost. And if a lad can't trust you or can't have some kind of confidence that you have his best interest in the heart, then it's lip service. So for me, restorative practice helped in that. As soon as you walk into a group, the way you sit, the way you carry yourself, your demeanor with these lads can automatically either put a lad on the defensive or can start building those bonds very quickly. And I found that as soon as I started doing the programs, which was a couple of years ago now, I found that very beneficial straight away.
They also use problem-solving circles with the restorative questions to deal with an incident. Pauline explains the benefit of it and Oisin gives an example.
There is one way in the formal setting that we would use it, and we have used lots of different models over the years that I've been here to do what we call problem solving after an incident. And I suppose for me, the significant difference with the restorative piece is talking about thinking rather than feeling. a lot of the young people we work with wouldn't be able to identify their feelings or wouldn't be aware of their feelings. So it is a real positive to look at what they're thinking rather than what they're feeling.
Doing the problem solving with the young person and using the questions myself, and like, you know, to have, like, I was in there, this was before we did the training with all my kind of teammates and that, and I used the six questions with a young person, and the other staff member that was with me that day when we came out afterwards, like, you know, like I would consider them to be a very experienced member of the care team here. Kind of, they've worked here longer than I have, and they've kind of, you know, but kind of, they're very experienced. And like afterwards, they came to me and said that was one of the best problem solving sessions I've ever seen. And the young person actually came up afterwards, and you know, kind of through the kind of, because I was using, because I'd used the six questions, and in the six questions, with the question like, how could things have been done differently, we'd identified, like, the young person was being bullied, and kind of, you know, using the six questions, we came up with the idea that if the young person feels threatened in any way, that they'll have a kind of like an emergency code word kind of thing, you know. And it's like they come up and just say, oh, can you give my Uncle Bob a ring on the phone? And like, they don't have an Uncle Bob, but the other young people wouldn't know that. So, you know, so in the end, it turned out that kind of young person only used it once that I know of. But you know, kind of, it gave the question, how could things have been done differently, that kind of gave a structure for us to identify, to kind of, to call Uncle Bob and that. So that was, you know, that was kind of, and then like the fact that one of my teammates came in and said that was brilliant the way you did that and that. So
Pauline, Sam and Selena reflect on the impact that their restorative interactions can have on young people, what is already happening and what could grow when RP are fully implemented. Accountability, ownership, sense of belonging and emotional maturity.
Giving the young people some responsibility for their own behaviour, be that in everyday practice on the unit or through the programmes, like the victim empathy. I would see that as something that has come in since the whole restorative piece began on campus, and it's a positive step in developing empathy. Also, I think there's more of a move at the moment towards giving young people more ownership over their own programme while they're here. So for a long time, it was, you know, you got a sentence, you did your sentence. You came in and you left on the day you were supposed to. Now there's much more a drive towards, well, when do you want to go? How are you going to get there? And what are you going to do to achieve that? Again, in an informal way on the units, I would see, we'd often talk about ownership of the unit or respect for the unit and having a community. Like, often the kids would be, they'd identify with the unit they're in, you know, and talk about kids. And so we're unit 9 and unit 10 are always getting this, or they don't do this, or they don't look after the gym, and we do, you know. And I think that when there's a good sense of belonging in the unit, things run well.
I think sometimes I see a lot of the work we do here. It's you've got to put it in the picture of the young people's lives in general. The lad might be here when he's 16, if he's 17 and a half, then he's gone. But this lad probably has another 50, 60, 70 years of his life to lead. So if you've given the message when they're growing emotionally that, you know, what your opinion is important, they might have heard that for 14 years of their life, coming from when they've played, some of the places they've come from, is that you're only relevance and things will happen to you rather than with you. If they get some impression whilst they're here 6 months or 9 months or 12 months that, yeah, you were part of this. This is your life. You get involved in the decisions, get involved in the discussions and the conversation about it. Then they can carry that somewhere else, wherever it may end up being, whether it's talking training or elsewhere, you know, whatever institution they end up in at some stage, then they might carry that with them. And then there's a value in what we've done with them restoratively here. It doesn't need to be a magic wand. You know what? We fixed them. It's me carry that emotional maturity from being treated with respect here on to wherever it takes them in.
And we might not see the benefits of that while the young person is here. That might only show later in life for them, and somebody else will see the benefits of it. But I mean, we don't just do it to see the benefits. We do it to help these young people develop new skills as well.
CDI and the Alternatives to Violence Project, AVP, have partnered to pilot a training for the young people themselves. AVP is an experiential peer-led training in RP where participants share skills and stories, build a sense of belonging in their community, and learn conflict resolution skills. First, AVP delivered a set of training for young people in two units, and then the ART program, Anti-Violence Restorative Practices, was piloted. James and Jean, who are both AVP and RP facilitators, delivered it. As Selena explains, both experiences were successful.
The AVP program had been delivered the summer before. It went, the pilot program went really well. And James and Jean then came onto campus to deliver the ART program, which was the Anti-Violence Restorative Practice training for young people. I suppose the program was to help young people develop the skills to deal with conflict in a non-violent way. The young people, they engaged willingly in the program. One of the things was that they actually got up and went to the training. It was delivered in blocks of 3 hours at a time. It's very hard, and even when we're delivering the offending behaviour program, we'd be lucky to get an hour of young people's attention at a time. And James and Jean got them to sit in the room for 3 hours sometimes at a time. So that was a telltale sign that they actually went and they stayed in the room. They started using the language on the unit more so in the beginning when they were doing the AVP. And if something would come up, they would say, let's AVP it.
Interestingly, the training of the young people helped the staff identify how important a full implementation of RP is beneficial, and it led to a new set of training for the staff. In the specific context of Oberstown, where young people have their freedom taken away from them, where parents and young people may be vulnerable and have experienced trauma, and where also a lot of different external stakeholders are involved, restorative practices offer a very helpful structure to deal with difficult situations, as Oisin, Brian, Selena and Sam explain.
I suppose there's kind of a difference in this environment, which is, out in the public, you know, if a young person goes to a youth centre and they're in a restorative circle, you know, they can get up and walk out of the room and that. And like it's here in Oberstown, it's a detention centre. You know, it's like, you know, their freedoms and things have been taken away from them and that. So, you know, that can be difficult. I suppose it has its own problems. But like we'd work here with a kind of opt in or opt out kind of thing as well. So let's say we'd have a weekly young person's meeting. And on the units, kind of to give the young people, and that's a kind of restorative thing. I definitely think our work with CDI and that helped me to kind of structure the meetings on the unit that I work on, and basically when we started off, we did up a kind of list of rules and kind of, you know, it was heavy on things like respect and fairness and that. And one of the things was like, you know, you can opt into the meeting, and like if you want to talk, fair enough, that's, you know, but like to respect other people, like, you know, we have a talking piece, and that's kind of, we actually have a few talking pieces, a few little different ones dependent on the mood and that. But it's important to have the opt out thing as well. So, you know, that's there if the young person isn't in the mood for it. Kind of, you know, let's say when we have these kind of young people's meetings, kind of like a forum kind of thing, we sit in the circle and that. And if a new young person is detained or kind of new admission comes in, we'd explain kind of like, you know, this is your first meeting, and, you know, explain the rules. And we kind of have the rules on one of those, it's like a kind of plastic kind of sheet, and it's like a whiteboard, and you can write on it and you just bring that in. It's the same from last week, and that's the rules that the young people themselves have come up with, and that, and kind of try and keep it that it's the young people talking, not us the adults, and that it's their meeting, you know.
Relationships is our absolutely everything, internal and external relationships here for us on the campus with one another, but also with our external stakeholders. And usually in this room, we're meeting external stakeholders. We have a lot of interaction with An Garda Síochána, Probation Service, TUSLA, and other organisations, youth workers, crucially also young people and parents. And most of those meetings take place in these rooms. Some meetings are very, very genial and very, very pleasant and very non-controversial. And some meetings are far more challenging, where we're dealing with very, very serious issues for people and issues that are affecting people's lives, and issues that cause a lot of tension and a lot of pain to people. A lot of the people that we work with here, both young people and parents, have experienced considerable trauma in their lives. They've experienced abuse, including institutional abuse. The systems sometimes don't work well for them. And we, so we work with people that are feeling a lot of pain, and then hurt to people. So we all of us experience a lot of that as well. My colleagues that are working more directly on the floor a lot more than I do now. I get it more sort of more across the desk or by email, but these guys get it very loudly and verbally into their faces a lot of the time. But I do find the restorative practice to be extremely helpful in the thing.
It's one of the things that became apparent to me while working with the young people out on permitted absence was the importance of using it with parents, because a lot of parents wouldn't have had previous placements. Maybe the young person might have been, they might have been involved in decisions around the young people. I think they find very much so that they've been involved while the young person has been here, that people have treated them with respect, that they've been listened to. So I think not only do we use it with the young people and our staff teams, we use it in our dealings with parents, external agencies, anybody else who we come in contact with.
I'd like you to be aware that it's a very different environment here to some extent to maybe a school or a community group or even certain therapeutic communities, because the dynamic here is different. Every young person here is compelled to be here. So the community that restorative practice appeals to or seeks to build, it isn't there. The relationship that Pauline alluded to can be very confrontational, us versus them. And although restorative practice is all about breaking that down and helping us pull in the same direction, some lads, they're always going to be antagonistic to that and pull against you. And that could be a long, laborious process of trying to break that down. And you do that by being there for them and helping them solve their issues, self-solving their problems as they arise, helping them reflect on what they were doing. Why did you do that? Where's that coming from? So that's a long, drawn-out process. It isn't the case of a one-size-fits-all. And that's ongoing all the time as well.
All are working towards the full implementation of restorative practices in the campus and can see the benefit it will bring.
But I think just as equally, there's a value for restorative practice in terms of dealing with the people who work here. It's a very difficult environment working here sometimes. And to be treated with respect, empathically, and people to listen to you and to feel that's reflected in the people who are dealing with you is as important for the staff working here as it is for the young people in our care. And if you don't feel valued or respected, it's very hard for you then to communicate those values to the young people that we're minding. That appeals to me. I like that the fact that restorative practice should be across the entire campus, not just on a particular residential unit. So I think there's scope for that to expand here.
So I think it's really good. It's a great kind of platform for us as child care workers for working with the young people. It gives a structure to what we're doing already, you know. So I'd love to kind of see it more in go further, kind of, you know, within this organization, kind of, like, you know, we have our own ethos anyway. It makes sense to me that it could kind of develop more throughout the organization and that, because there's definitely a place for it, you know. I don't think there'd be so much traction in the community and like within the justice department and that, like, you know, some of the other programs that have stemmed out of restorative practice. And like, it's a worldwide thing, you know, it's like kind of, you know, stemmed out from Australia, New Zealand, Canada, and like, you know, into Northern Ireland. And, you know, like if it can work in Northern Ireland with, like, you know, all the kind of fractious relationships up there, I think it can work anywhere, you know. So I'd love to see kind of come into more into kind of our policies here, because I think it definitely has a place.
So in terms of the journey, I think that to acknowledge that there's all those informal bits, that lots of them are already happening, but that we can just name them before we try and do the bigger pieces, so that everybody feels comfortable using the terms from restorative practice, that if the whole staff and the whole management and all the tiers on campus are constantly using those practices and become comfortable with it and confident in it, that the young people will just follow through modelling. They'll just pick it up from us.
Thank you very much.
Thank you for listening. We hope you enjoyed our podcast. Don't forget to rate and to subscribe to the show. And thank you to the production team at the podcast studios and to all who took part on the project. Find out more at cdi.ie.